All right, folks, welcome back to the Mountain West Wire podcast. Hey, it's a mini episode. We have not done these in a while because when you move, it takes away a lot of time. Check us out, MWR.com. Jeremy Moss, obviously, hanging out. And we're going to talk BYU football. Now, before you throw rocks at me and debris coming my direction, we got a good reason for it. We got a good buddy, Mitch Harper, talk about the Cougars, who take on three Mountain West teams this year, Hawaii, Boise State, and Utah State. So, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jeremy. It's a little bit surprising to think that there's only three Mountain West teams on BYU schedule. Usually, it feels like there's about four or five, a little bit lower in number, but still, there's a nice flavor of Mountain West teams on BYU's independent schedule once again.
We do. For those who are unfamiliar with Mitch Harper, you should know who he is. He's been on before when we had our extravaganza about Gonzaga, BYU basketball, Mountain West, which came out to big fat nothing. But check him out on Twitter, Mitch_Harper. He's over does stuff at ESPN 700, ESPN 960 Sports on Twitter, all over the place. So let's ask you that super quick. Were you surprised at all that nothing happened at all from that basketball conversation a few months ago?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised because I really thought that Gonzaga was going to be headed for the Mountain West Conference. I think that ultimately, you know, the West Coast Conference making all those concessions for Gonzaga by, you know, trimming down the conference schedule from 18 games to 16 and then, you know, allocating more money for NCAA tournament, you know, bids or the advancement. Yeah, the advancement into the tournament. So that went in Gonzaga's favor. So the WCC basically caved to everything Gonzaga, and rightfully so. I mean, they carry the league. But still, I thought it was going to be a move by Gonzaga's part to increase their competition level because I believe that the Mountain West Conference basketball would have been a huge upgrade for Gonzaga. And BYU would have been kind of left in the dust, you know, as the only team in the WCC. They would have probably had more chances to actually win a conference, but it would have been a bad situation. So I think it worked out for BYU, but for Gonzaga, I was very surprised that they didn't end up ultimately going to the Mountain West Conference.
Yeah, because they get two extra games. Are they going to add, what, Duke and Arizona to the schedule? So it would have been crazy. Two top five teams, Nevada them, but it's neat. I think it'll happen in a couple of years, but let's get to football, the real sport, because we all watch football more than basketball.
That's right.
So here's what we got. So BYU football, give a quick overview, because we chatted here and there through some of our team previews. BYU has a new offensive staff. I believe nearly everybody is gone. Jeff Grimes from LSU is the new OC. Ty Detmer's out. So give a quick update on, like, what's the new staff about and what's in store for this offense, I should say.
Yeah, the offense, I think, is still kind of a mystery. I mean, they say things like, they're going to be multiple. I would expect, though, that this offense, they want to run the football quite a bit. I mean, ideally, they want to be balanced, but they want their foundation to be running the football and relying on their offensive line. BYU feels pretty confident. They got about 8 to 10 guys on the offensive line that they could play in a game. So they're going to try to utilize the strength they have up front along the offensive line. And well, that ties into, as you mentioned, Jeff Grimes. That's his background. He's always been an offensive line coach wherever he's been, from the likes of, you know, LSU, Texas A&M, Boise State, Arizona State. He's been all over the map, even BYU before, back in 04 to 06. Jeff Grimes has been all over. So his background is an offensive line coach, and they're going to rely on that offensive line to really lead BYU, and they're going to try and have a ground attack. But also, I mean, it's BYU, though. You know, they gotta air it out. They gotta have some semblance of a passing attack, but don't look for them to be this aerial assault team all of a sudden with a new offensive staff. I think they're still gonna try to run that football, but they gotta have more balance, because last year was an absolute disaster. Not only statistically were they bad offensively, but they just weren't even competitive. There was many games, and one including that LSU, it felt like they weren't even across the yard line. So it was really bad last year. It took a big hit on the brand of BYU, but I think they feel pretty good that they're ready. They're in a position to maybe surprise some folks in 2018, because this is a very unique situation BYU's in, being in a spot where literally no one is expecting anything from BYU. It's kind of new territory for them.
So let's go with you mentioned the passing attack, which they've been known for decades. I've heard they have about, is the depth chart about 8 quarterbacks, if I'm correct?
Yeah, it started out back at the first of spring. It started out with around 8 guys. That instantly got trimmed down after about 2 or 3 practices in spring to around 5 guys. And now it's down to around 4, maybe 3, depending on who you talk to. But about 4 guys for BYU's quarterback race. And the most notable name is Tanner Mangum, of course, who back in 2015 had over, you know, pretty much rewrote the BYU freshman record books, throwing for nearly 3,500 yards, had big wins over Boise State in a Hail Mary fashion, and then, of course, Nebraska as well. But since, Tanner Mangum hasn't really done much in his BYU career. Last year was really bad for him, and he suffered an Achilles injury against Fresno State, who was a fantastic team last year, winning 10 ball games. But I mean, Tanner Mangum, the thing about him that's interesting is that he's going into his senior year, and he's never in his career won a quarterback battle, because last year he was just handed the reins as the quarterback. They just said, hey, you're the guy, you did great in 2015, you learned behind Taysom, you learned Ty Detmer's offense, you're the guy now. So he's never in his whole career actually won a quarterback competition. He lost in 2016 to Taysom Hill. 2015, he was coming back from a mission, and then last year he didn't have one. So it's going to be interesting to see how he shapes up coming into this quarterback competition. He's down 22 pounds. That was needed. But then after him, you got guys like Zach Wilson, a true freshman from Corner Canyon, which is notable on him is that Jeff Grimes was the one that recruited Zach Wilson. So I think that's an interesting element to this dynamic. But then also you got guys like Joe Critchlow, who if for Mount West fans, they remember maybe Critchlow having that really big game against UNLV, kind of surprising many folks, including myself, mm-hmm. that they pulled off that upset, beating UNLV when, you know, UNLV looked primed to be ready to get a bowl bid and become bowl eligible. Critchlow's in the mix again, and then Bo Hodge, Merrill Hodge's son of Pittsburgh Steeler lore and a former ESPN analyst. He's another guy as well. So that's the 4 quarterbacks that are going to be going into fall camp looking to compete for that job.
So it's Tanner, right? Is that who's it going to be for sure?
Come on. You know, honestly, Jeremy, I would say I think he's going to be given every opportunity to win the job. It's because he has all that experience. But I would not be surprised if we see Zach Wilson at some point this season starting for BYU. I just really think that he had an impressive spring, and he really turned a lot of heads. And I think the addition of Zach Wilson, who was once a Boise State commit, mm-hmm. You know, and that was a big loss for Boise State's class. Brian Harsin and that staff are really making a push to keep him solidified heading into that early December signing period. But ultimately, he flipped, went to BYU a few days after the signing period began. And it's a big addition for BYU because, again, he's really elevated the rest of the quarterback room, including Tanner Mangum. I would say Mangum's probably the safe bet right now, but don't be surprised if Zach Wilson's the guy. If I was Kalani Sitake, I would go with Zach Wilson personally, just because I feel that Zach Wilson is talented enough to get BYU 6 or 7 wins, which is probably the ceiling with the older guy in Tanner Mangum that BYU has coming into 2018 as well.
All right, let's go to receiving group. We have one familiar guy, Dylan Colley, and then a few other guys. I've watched this BYU receiving court. It was not good last year. Outside of Matt Bushman, tight end, who's amazing, almost 50 catches last year, he's going to be a legit tight end, could be All-American consideration. They bring in Dylan Colley, who's at Hawaii, who we've seen a lot. He was the second guy behind John Ursua, who's amazing, back again for the Warriors. Is he instantly going to be the number one receiver on this team? Because not just because it wasn't great last year, but because he is pretty good. And so where does he like fit in with this team? Do you think, like I said, will he be number one guy from the get-go? Or will it be like Hifo or Micah Simon or somebody?
I think it's going to be the former. I think you're talking about Dylan Colley coming in and being BYU's number one guy at the beginning, especially from a leadership standpoint, too. I mean, those names you mentioned in BYU's receiving room, you got Aleva Hifo, Micah Simon, Akile Davis, and people that are hearing those names are going, what have those guys done? What have they done? And that's a valid question.
Not much.
I don't even know what they haven't done much at all. Whereas Dylan Colley comes in, he picked BYU over Vanderbilt and got a little bit of interest from UCLA. I don't know if there was actually an offer extended to him, but his inner circle stated that, you know, UCLA was showing some interest in Chip Kelly, but I think it was pretty easy that why he picked BYU, because he could step in and be the number one guy. I think he will be that guy, and he's already being looked upon as a leader on BYU's offensive side of the ball, which is still relatively young outside of Tanner Mangum, who's been there for about 10 or so years, it feels like. But Dylan Colley, I think, will have a immediate impact. I don't think his stats will suggest, you know, wide receiver number one type numbers, but I think for the first time in the receiving group, BYU's got a guy that they can count on. They're going to throw the football to him, and he's going to be able to haul it in and catch that football. Whereas the last few years, there's been some guys that are they're talented and they got some ability, but whether they're dropping the balls, they're running wrong routes. I think there's just a trust factor with Dylan Colley that will elevate him to being BYU's number one wide receiver, even though I don't think his stats will suggest that he's a number one type guy. I think that would be, as you mentioned, Matt Bushman, who I think could be one of the 10 best, you know, tight ends in college football this fall.
I think with Colley as well, because last year he was the slot guy behind, like, Sarasura, who busted, I think, what, ACL tear mid-year. He's not going to be, like you said, not a typical number one guy, because he's a little smaller. But when he catch the ball, I thought, instead of the other side, have a few bigger numbers when you see Arcero go off for 200-plus yards twice before he got hurt. Like, we're a little not disappointed, but I know he's a different player, but people thought he'd do a bit better. But who knows? If he's a top guy again, another tight end, like Bushman, who can be out there, maybe some of the other guys will make some plays. But it'll be – let's just say this. We can both agree it's going to be better than last year, right? It has to be.
Yeah, it has to be better than last year, because if it's anything worse or on par with what happened last year offensively, then a lot of guys, all these new faces, might be out of jobs. I mean, because if you have as bad of a year offensively as they did last season, when you're probably one of the 10 or so worst offenses in football, yeah, that's not going to fly at a place that really prides itself on offensive football to the level that BYU's had over the years. So if they can get some consistency at quarterback and you know, stick with their guy, whoever it ends up being, and that guy stays healthy throughout the season, BYU could, you know, surprise some folks. What type of surprising, to what level could that be? You know, that'll be seen, you know, later on. But if they can just get some consistency at that spot, I would imagine that Jeff Grimes and Aaron Roderick's offense is going to be a lot more simplified and catered to these players, to really make it simple on them. Because I think the pro-style offense with Ty Detmer was great in theory, and it made a lot of sense for the type of athletes BYU can recruit, because of their maybe some disadvantages, if you will. But just the terminology, it just didn't hit home for the kids, and it was hard to ultimately execute it on the field. Whereas Grimes' offense, it's probably going to be about 15 or so plays, and they're just going to rep them out until they really master them, and then they'll have three or four or five different options within, you know, those 15 or so plays.
All right, let's go to defense really quick. I assume these are the three best guys. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You got Corbin Kaufusi. You also have, I was going to say Fred Warner, Troy Warner back there. Or is it Sione Takitaki? Like, who's their best defender on this team?
Yeah, I would say Corbin Kaufusi. I think Corbin Kaufusi's got the best, maybe potential to be an NFL draft pick. I mean, I even saw in Athlon Sports, I thought it was a little bit way too high, but they had him as a top 35 draft prospect. Ooh. Where you're talking knocking on the first round. Again, I thought that was extremely high, but you look at the pedigree. I mean, Corbin, his brother Bronson's a Baltimore Raven. His dad, Steve Kaufusi, was playing with the Eagles, and physically he looks really good. He's had a whole offseason to just focus on football. He didn't play any BYU basketball this past spring and winter. He's just been focusing on football, and I think that's really paid off for him, to where physically he looks like he's due for a pretty big year at that defensive end spot. But I still have some question marks about BYU's pass rush as a whole. You know, a lot of scrutiny was placed on Ty Detmer and that offense last year, and rightfully so, because it was so historically bad. But the defense doesn't avoid any of the blame either. I mean, they were okay. They were middle of the road, you know, 70th or so nationally, but I thought they should have been a lot better than they were. There's not going to be as many excuses for them this year. They have to perform. Elisa Tuiyanki, a guy that's been really close with Kalani Sitake for a long time, he's the defensive coordinator. He's in his third year with Kalani. I think this is a really important year for him, because if you don't see significant strides, significant improvements statistically and containing teams and as far as, you know, points allowed, you might start to see rumblings that, you know, Kalani might need to pull the plug on his friend, and that would be, you know, a tough dynamic. Expect for Kalani, though, to step in a lot more and be involved in that defense like he was at Utah and at Oregon State in previous stops. But still, I think the defense, you know, after Corbin Cafusi, some of the best players. You mentioned Sione Takitaki and Troy Warner. Troy Warner's an interesting study because he's moving from cornerback to safety, but he's even said himself at BYU Media Day last month that he's not 100% yet. And that's pretty notable when a player says that, because usually you would expect maybe a coach to say, oh, he's not 100%, but usually players, they're like, oh yeah, I'm ready to go. Troy Warner even mentioned himself that he's not 100% yet. So I would maybe, you know, I think BYU fans are kind of hoping that he is ready, but if not, a guy to keep an eye on is Zane Anderson, an outside linebacker who's going to try and fill the shoes of Fred Warner at that flash linebacker spot, as they like to call it. Tall order, but in spring, early indications would suggest that Zane Anderson's going to be really good for BYU in this 4-3 defense.
All right, so let's get to the three teams on the Mountain West, because I assume the defense should be better as well. So we got Utah State, Hawaii, and Boise State. It's middle of the season. It's after, like, the we've seen the schedule, if you haven't, at Arizona, Cal, at Wisconsin, at Washington, mixed in. Pretty difficult schedule the first half, like last year. How big of a threat, like, we don't need to go in-depth, but they play Utah State. It's in Provo. It's sort of a rivalry. We both know it's sort of a rivalry, because there's that one time BYU couldn't find the wagon wheel to hand over to the Aggies. So what is your first thought? Like, I know you've chatted about the Aggies, what they're going to do from spring. Possibly a bit better offense with another year of David Yost there. Do they scare BYU at all with Jordan Love quarterback?
Yeah, I think they definitely do. I mean, now you've seen, since BYU went into the world of independence, you've seen, you know, this BYU-Utah State game evolve into, oh, you know, BYU just shows up and crushes the Aggies every year and takes home that wagon wheel. Now the wagon wheel is actually a talking point to where, BYU is talking about acknowledging Utah State as a rival. BYU in their team meeting room, they have a bunch of different pillars for the 2018 season and goals that they have. And one of those pillars ties into two of these teams we're talking about, and that's rivalries. They mentioned Utah, but they also say you got to defeat Utah State and Boise State. So BYU is now saying officially that Utah State and Boise State are rivals. And I think that Utah State game is very interesting, because I think Utah State, there's a wide spectrum on where maybe the preseason forecasters are looking at the Aggies. They could be anywhere from 9-3 or 6-6. I think that, Matt Wells had a fantastic bounce back year a season ago, and I thought kind of exceeded expectations just getting back to a bowl game. I think that's going to be a very interesting game on that Friday night in Provo. Last year, BYU coughed up the ball seven turnovers. They had an injured quarterback with Bo Hodge. He went out. Then they had Coy Detmer Jr. Step in, and he just looked completely overmatched. But I still think that that's a game that's a 50-50 toss-up. I don't think there's now this narrative that you can just say BYU shows up and crushes the Aggies. I think Utah State, they're getting similar type of recruits to that of BYU in some recruiting battles, and I think that's been showing itself a little bit. I still think BYU has overall the better talent, but I think that Utah State is much more comparable within striking distance than maybe we would have thought 10 years ago.
Sure. At least there's no Jalen Davis this year, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That was a crazy game last year. But Utah State, they've been so weird. I think they're 1-12 in one score games the past, 3 years. Yeah. And so if it's a close one, I don't know if I'd pick the Aggies, because you're right. I've seen people 10 wins, 9 wins, possible win the division behind Boise State, second team. Really? I see it, but the consistency has just been – it's hard to pick this team. So let's go to Hawaii. Is that just pretty much a gimme? But – here's what I want to say about Hawaii. They're having the run and shoot, Mitch. That's coming back to the islands.
I'm excited about that. As someone who appreciates the BYU-Hawaii rivalry, I'm someone that strongly is promoting the, bring back the white helmets, so those rainbow. Bring it for that BYU game. They got to wear those, you know, rainbow jerseys. In fact, I'm wearing a Hawaii t-shirt, throwback t-shirt, in honor of this interview.
Amazing.
Right now, because I love the throwback Rainbow Warriors. And how can you not like Nick Rolovich? I'm rooting for that guy. He's fantastic. But I would say this is probably the easiest game on BYU's schedule. Well, you know, they do have McNeese State, but that was a pretty good McNeese State team last year. They went 9-2 in the FCS ranks, but still, Hawaii's probably got better overall talent. But I think it's just a hard thing to expect Hawaii to win in Provo. They've never done it in their program's history. So Hawaii, they've always been a thorn in BYU's side in the islands, but in Provo, they've never won in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and I don't think that changes this year. I think that's one game that I could say right now I feel pretty confident that BYU wins that one. And there's not many of those on BYU's schedule in 2018.
Yeah, there was East UMass last year, so can't forget that.
Exactly, that's right.
One cool note my buddy told me about Hawaii, they've never won a game in the Mountain Time Zone. They've won one game ever in the Mountain Time Zone.
I'm trying to think which one that was. Was that against Utah or Air Force?
I don't recall. We chatted about it on our last show we did, but if you think about it, maybe it's within the Mountain West. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, that makes more sense. But I'm like, well, that can't be possible. They play the Mountain Conference. Well, they only play three teams in the division every year, one or two at home. I think they're like 1-9 since they joined the league. But when you first hear it out loud, only one win ever, it's like, and or within the Mountain West, it's kind of odd. But then look who they play. It's like, where they play. It's like, okay, they play like three games a year, maybe four.
Yeah, and you go back to the old days of the WAC, when all these teams were in the same league, and Hawaii would have eight home games, and they'd get kind of an exception to not play as many road games against conference foes. They'd have eight home games, so that is plausible to think that they've only won one or two games in the Mountain Time Zone, because you look back at the history and there was you'd go three or four straight years BYU wouldn't get a return visit to Provo. They kind of did it by design. They wanted to always play in the islands for a recruiting edge, and BYU was kind of a founding father, if you will, when we came to Hawaii recruiting next to the Warriors. But that's an interesting stat nonetheless, because they haven't had much success in the Mountain Time Zone over the years.
And it's pretty interesting. The last game on here is probably the best out of the three, at Boise State. Broncos I'm going to say they're number one or number two for that New Year's Six spot. I guess, I don't know, got Fresno, maybe. People still believe in UCF, which we'll see. But I guess I remember seeing that little picture that was sent out. You mentioned earlier about the rivalry. Where would you, outside of Utah, is this like their number two rival, even more than Utah State?
I mean, honestly, I would say, yeah, I'd say it's number two. I mean, because Boise State's just an excellent program. I mean, every year you can count on them being, in the nationally ranked conversation. I mean, well, how many years has it been? You probably know better than I, but there's been at least, 13, 14 years where they've appeared at least one AP poll in a season. I mean, they just always are in the national conversation, and that's the type of games BYU wants. They want programs as an independent to where that you play this team, you're going to be talked about, especially if you win. And it's a great opportunity for BYU and to have it in the month of November, because that's always been a battle for BYU, is to have, games that mean something in November. At least when I say mean something in the national landscape, because Boise State, they're going to be at worst, I would imagine, one loss. I think this is a Boise State team that's undefeated this season. I think they're loaded. I've always been a huge fan of Brian Harsin. That's going to be a really tall order for BYU. They could be a completely different team, though, by that juncture, and that should make it a lot of fun to see what they can do. And they've given Boise some close calls over the years. I mean, they've 2 years ago, it was a one-point game, and 4 years ago up on the blue, that was kind of a blowout where Broncos team got just wrecked. But there's been some great games, the 7-6 game in 2012.
Big punt in your shadow of the goalpost.
Yeah, so there's been just Matt Payne back in 2004, 28-27. So there's been a lot of great games over the years up on the blue turf for BYU. They haven't been able to find a way to get it done, though. Unfortunately for BYU, I don't think they get it done this year either. Just Boise State's on a completely another level compared to BYU. And oddly enough, Jeremy, I think it's an interesting dynamic, because I remember when Boise State was coming up through the ranks and really, ascending in college football. Think about 2001 to 2003. And there was always these comparisons to Boise State is kind of like BYU of the 80s. Well, now I think BYU would love to be the Boise State of what they're doing, kind of a role reversal once again. Just Boise State's just a machine that's just not slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, we'll see. They got Oklahoma State. They play Fresno and San Diego State, so that'll be tough to get out there. But I'm hoping it's a good game because I want to make fun football. When these two teams are at least above average, that makes for a really, really good game. So
yeah,
let me ask you this real quick. I got two more things before I wrap it up here. What's their record against those three teams?
I'm going to say 2-1.
With the Boise loss, right?
Yeah, Boise. Okay. I think that Boise one's a loss. I think BYU finds a way to squeak it out against Utah State, and I think they roll over Hawaii. I think BYU goes 2-1 in those three Mountain West games.
All right, is Kalani on the hot seat if they don't make a bowl game?
You know, that's a good question. I think that if they get to 5-7, I still could see a scenario where BYU keeps Kalani. From what I understand, he's under contract for 4 years, and BYU's not historically known for paying out guys, so I would imagine if they're 5-7, they've shown progress, he still would come back. But I think there is you can sense the pressure that you got to get back to a bowl game. 6-6 is doable, especially with his home slate, all the home games with maybe, you know, Cal and Northern Illinois. Those are some pretty decent teams, maybe better talent than BYU, Northern Illinois on defense, but those six home games for BYU should win those games. If you do that, defend home field, you're going bowling. So I think it's important for them to get to a bowl game. But I think those Mountain West games, though, I feel pretty good right now that BYU can get two of those, two out of the three.
Makes sense. Like, I know they lost. I joked about UMass. That should be a win. Arizona new head coach Kevin Sumlin, probably not, but you never know with a new coach there. Khalil Tate's pretty good, though, quarterback. So you're thinking like 6-6 for BYU most likely?
Yeah, I think honestly, my prediction for BYU is 7-5. I think it's critical for them to come out of the gates against Arizona and Cal in the first 2 weeks. Those are going to be critical games to really determine whether or not BYU can go to a bowl game. I think those are big ones for BYU, but I think they can carve out 7 wins. I think they can find a way. I honestly feel more confident about the system in place that BYU is building with the offensive staff than maybe what we're seeing with the defensive staff. Because, again, I don't think BYU is going to have much of a pass rush at all outside of Corbin Kaufusi. I like Sione Takitaki, but the defense has a lot of question marks for me. So, oddly enough, I would feel a little more confident about BYU's offense than actually their defense going into the season. So, should be a lot of fun, though. I'm really excited to see what they can do, and for the first time in really many years, BYU fans can't, you know, complain about just going 6-6 or 7-5 if that happens, because that would be a successful year to kind of bounce back and get kind of respectability back on BYU's side.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mitch. Where can we find – I know you do a lot of stuff. I got your Twitter, Mitch_Harper. We can hear you on ESPN 960. Where else are you doing things related to BYU?
Yeah, I try to stay busy. ESPN 960, 3-7 Monday through Friday with Ben Criddle. ESPN 700. I'm doing stuff with Bill Riley, voice of the Utes, oddly enough, but that's 11-2 Monday through Friday, and then also Athlon Sports, Cougar Sports Wire. So keeping busy, doing as much as I can to stay abreast of all things BYU, but also my Twitter, Mitch_Harper. It's kind of a hub for everything that goes on, and keep people posted there.
So no MitchHarper.com like we talked about last time?
No MitchHarper.com. I'm not cool enough for that.
No worries. All right, Mitch, thank you very much. Well, maybe we'll chat again. We'll see. But we got the three games coming up, and everybody, thanks for tuning in. If you like Mitch, again, Mitch_Harper on Twitter. Follow him throughout the year because there's a handful of games. Maybe something else going on with BYU. Who knows? Maybe they'll join the conference midseason in the Mountain West. Crazier things have happened, but just check us out, MWR.com. Subscribe to our stuff. I guess wherever you can buy your podcast, go to that and follow Mitch. And is your podcast coming back as well, or should I not bring that up?
Yeah, it'll be coming back this fall. Cougar Center podcast will be coming back this fall, getting the preseason episodes fired up, so it should be a lot of fun. So Cougar Center podcast as well.
Excellent. All right, thank you, Mitch, and we'll see you around.
All right, thanks, Jeremy.